crime by branding it as self-defense or targeted killing. There is no such legal term in the international law. It is an assassination and cannot be justified by fake terms. It's an extrajudicial murder which violates the UN resolutions 1368 and 1370. Furthermore, based on the Chicago Convention, the use of UAVs in another sovereign country requires the permission of that country. Iraq says it did not give such a permission to the U.S. to carry out the strike.
Iran and Iraq have formed a joint investigation committee comprised of Iraqi and Iranian judicial experts. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, more than 120 people have been identified in connection with General Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
General Soleimani was on a mission to Iraq, a mission that concerns the fight against terrorism. The Convention on Special Missions protects the rights of General Soleimani, but Washington breached that convention as well. So all these violations of international law are considered a crime, and we are taking the case to international judicial bodies to penalize the perpetrators.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from the terror group. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists, something which experts say leads to a safe interpretation that Washington must be on the terrorists' team.
2 years have passed since General Soleimani was assassinated, and Iran is still as resolute to prosecute those behind the incident. Iran's judiciary calls the culprits the terrorists' comrades, saying it will not stop until all perpetrators are brought to justice. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In a press conference in the capital Sana'a, Yemen's Eye for Humanity Center for Rights and Development released its new report on the Saudi crimes committed against Yemenis during 2021. The report highlights the number of victims of the Saudi air attacks and the destruction of the country's infrastructure.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its raids against civilian facilities and residential areas crowded with civilians in Yemen, and tried to justify this by saying that there were military activities in those areas, which was not true. We monitor all the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition and the victims who fall in Saudi airstrikes and mortar shelling.
The report says Saudi warplanes have launched over 9,900 airstrikes against civilian facilities across Yemen last year, killing 387 civilians, including 96 children, and injuring hundreds more. In a previous report, the human rights group said more than 43,000 civilians had been hurt or killed in relentless airstrikes across Yemen since Saudi Arabia launched a war on its southern neighbor in 2015. It said nearly 4,000 children were among those killed.
As people around the world celebrate the New Year with festivals and joyful events, Yemenis enter a new year of war and siege imposed on their country by Saudi Arabia. People here believe that the years-long resistance will eventually bring Riyadh to justice for its crimes in Yemen. Abdulatif Washali, Sana'a.
France has assumed the rotating presidency of the Council of the European Union for the next 6 months, with Emmanuel Macron promising to make the world's largest common market into a more influential and independent bloc. Yet the European Union begins 2022 beset by major difficulties. The open wound of Brexit, marginalization in global geopolitics, an uncertain post-corona economic future coming on the heels of a lost decade of economic growth, and deep divisions on the issues of immigration, right-wing economics, and relations with Moscow. The European Union appears to be at a crossroads. With Angela Merkel finally stepping down, there is no clear leader or figurehead. Emmanuel Macron wants to assume her mantle, but many say that his liberal strongman approach to the yellow vests has reinforced perceptions that the EU is not just non-democratic, but anti-democratic. Historically, no country's elite has been more pro-Europe than in France, and no French leader has been more pro-EU than Macron. However, analysts remind that Macron only has the power to push the EU's agenda in a certain direction and not to decide policy unilaterally, as he has often done in France.
egocentric and ethnocentric.
It's a bit egotistical and ethnocentric to think that France will be able to accomplish anything more than Slovenia, Sweden, or any of the other previous heads of the European Union. So, in the matter of a common defense policy, of a green energy transition, of economic regulation, of ending economic stagnation, Macron won't be able to accomplish in 6 months anything which Brussels hasn't been able to achieve in the past 10 years.
With a tightly contested presidential election looming in April, it seems certain that Macron's continental-sized ambitions will be constrained by domestic politics.
C'est plus un obstacle.
I think Macron will find the rotating presidency to actually be an obstacle to his re-election ambitions. Representing the interests of 70 million Frenchmen and also 450 million citizens of the European Union, and also being a candidate running for re-election, are three very different hats to wear. He will find himself in many conflicting positions.
The philosophy of Angela Merkel was marked by avoiding tough solutions to social questions while also demanding right-wing economic changes. As the EU emerges into a very different post-corona world, Europe may be demanding different solutions and possibly even different leaders before France's rotating presidency is over. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
'21 has come to an end, but the battle for peace and justice still continues here. In the Indian-administered Kashmir, people are hopeless more than ever as things have slipped from bad to worse. The Indian government said Kashmir will return to normalcy when it abrogated its special status in August 2019. But after that, the region has seen an outburst of violence. Media reports say that over the last 3 years, nearly 900 people have been killed in the region. Out of these casualties, 580 were militants, 180 were government forces, and 125 were civilians. People here say they are not hopeful that the central government will bring them justice and treat them fairly.
People are often excited on New Year's Eve, but we are an exception. We are fearful of what might happen to us the next year, because this year was full of bloodshed. We only seek peace through dialogue.
We had terrifying experiences in 2021. So many lives were lost. The region's unemployment rate is highest in India. Some decisions were taken against the people of Kashmir, which were not expected. Now we seek nothing but peace. 3 decades of strife is enough.
Following India's move to cancel the region's partial autonomy, Kashmir has witnessed many changes coming without the consent of its people. For example, people who are not permanent residents of Kashmir were barred from purchasing property up until 2 years ago. But now, all Indians can buy property in the region. People here say the room for dissent is limited. Those who criticize policies of the government are frequently detained, so people of Kashmir are forced to be silent. In 2021, the region saw around 275 incidents of bloodshed, including civilians, militants, and government forces. Estimates say 189 pro-independence fighters have been killed in 2021, but authorities say challenges are still there.
Hybrid militancy is the biggest challenge for the year 2022. A major achievement in 2021 was the peaceful burial of Saeed Ali Gilani. 168 militants are currently active in Kashmir.
The Indian-administered Kashmir has been a bone of contention between India and Pakistan since the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. The two countries claim the region in full but rule it in parts. More than 3 decades of low-intensity conflict in Kashmir has exhausted the region socially as well as economically. Almost every household in the region has suffered losses. New Year is no time for them to celebrate. Shahanabad, Indian-administered Kashmir.
This gathering in Iran's town of Shahrare is a tribute to a man who's known as the father of national security in Iran, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Ahead of the second anniversary of his assassination, Iranian people and senior officials gathered to commemorate him and mourn his loss.
General Soleimani is no longer with us.
but his legacy will continue across the generations to come. His assassination is a huge miscalculation on the part of the US. He was an influential axis in the region, and his assassination led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from Iraq and then Afghanistan.
General Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was killed in 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism in our region. So by assassinating him, the U.S. sought to dispose of him to allow the terrorists to roam freely in the region to serve the interests of the American government.
By assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. thought in vain that it will stop his anti-terror activities. But in fact, Soleimani is still alive in the hearts of millions of Iranians who will continue his path stronger than ever.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that resulted in the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. His efforts made him known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. In 2020, millions of people in Iraq and Iran took part in his funeral ceremony to pay tribute to him and bid him farewell.
2 years into the incident, Iranians still mourn the loss of General Soleimani. They say they will not forget his endeavors in the fight against terrorism, something which earned him the title of a national hero and the guarantor of regional security. Yusuf Jalali from the town of Ray.
Iran's lead delegate to the Vienna talks, Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani, says there's been relatively good progress over the past few days in the negotiations aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
The main focus of the negotiations was sanctions removal. We had several meetings with the EU coordinator and the three European signatories, both on verification and guarantees.
Iran says it will go back to its nuclear commitments only after it verifies the full removal of U.S. sanctions. Tehran has also demanded guarantees that the U.S. will not withdraw from the JCPOA again or impose sanctions that violate the deal. A European source close to the negotiations says all participants agree that verification and assurances have to be reflected in the final document, but that there are still questions on how that is possible. So are these issues going to create major obstacles in the way of a final agreement?
Yes, it's a major problem because these European diplomats know quite well how verification can take place. It's not something strange. If the Iranians cannot use the banking system because behind the scenes the Americans are threatening banks, then that's a violation of the JCPOA.
Russia's lead delegate, Mikhail Olyanov, said he believed an agreement could be achieved in the first half of February, adding that although the discussions were difficult, there was steady progress.
General impression, business-like atmosphere, positive trends, recognized by everybody, by all participants. We need to be patient, persistent in our efforts, and we will overcome all the problems.
Informal consultations are set to continue within the framework of the Vienna talks. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
On since the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, made headlines, and Iranians still grieve his loss. On the second anniversary of the incident, thousands gathered at Tehran's Grand Mausoleum to pay tribute to him. Addressing the gathering, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi vowed to bring those behind the incident to justice.
If Trump and Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for the criminal act of assassinating Lieutenant Soleimani, Muslims will take our martyrs' revenge.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas, was assassinated in January 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport, on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is well known for dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh. This made him rise to fame in the region as the mastermind of the fight against terrorism.
Lieutenant Soleimani did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. We owe our security and stability to his sacrifices.
If it wasn't for Lieutenant General Soleimani, the entire region would have collapsed and fallen under Daesh control. Not only Iranians, but the people of the region are indebted to him.
The U.S. thought in vain that by assassinating Qasem Soleimani, it would stop his fight against terrorism. But in fact, the incident gave rise to a united front in the region against Washington, and that's what led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from the region.
Iran says it is seriously following up on its legal pursuit to prosecute those behind Soleimani's assassination. Iran and Iraq have recently formed a joint investigation committee comprising judicial experts from both countries. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, more than 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
People say by assassinating General Soleimani, the United States tried to disrupt the regional fight against terrorism, something which they say put Washington on a confrontational course with the countries in West Asia and marked the beginning of its exit from the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
France has broken the European record for corona infections, and nations across Western Europe are also reaching new daily highs as the pandemic has entered a new but seemingly less deadly phase.
The coronavirus right now is exploding right now in France. It's very scary to see. I saw over 200,000 infections in France in one day. So I'm nervous. I'm trying to get back to the United States right now, and I'm waiting for a COVID test right now. I'm very nervous. I want to make sure that it's negative so I'm able to get back home.
France currently has over 4 million active cases of corona, but 99.9% of them are classified as mild. Daily deaths are half of what they were a year ago, while shorter quarantines are being approved. Cases are soaring in part because many more people are getting tested prior to holiday gatherings, but France's hospital admissions are just a third of previous peaks. It appears increasingly certain that the new Omicron variant may spread like wildfire, but that it is significantly less lethal, causing many to have a cautious sense of relief.
Corona is mainly just a bad flu. It's only a serious risk for certain types of people. But for the overwhelming majority of people, if you get vaccinated, if you quarantine when you have symptoms, if you use common sense to protect yourself and others, then all will be fine.
The high transmission rate of Omicron does have some taking scientifically questionable steps not seen since the early days of the pandemic. Paris has just made face masks mandatory in all public places, even outdoors. Some nations, which aren't seeing an increase in cases, have banned public holiday festivities anyway. France, Italy, and other countries are debating making their health passes even more restrictive, which many say is an abuse of personal freedom.
France has long been considered the most vaccine-skeptical nation in the world. But measures which amount to either get vaccinated or live in social isolation have coerced 80% of the country into getting vaccinated.
One fact appears vital. In France, the unvaccinated are far more likely to be in intensive care than those who have chosen to be inoculated. What many are hoping for in 2022 is that Omicron truly does herald the end of the lethal phase of Corona 19, which would render moot the controversies and uncertainties over how to best handle the long-running pandemic. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshipping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
As ceremonies are underway in Iran to mark the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of the country's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, the world is realizing more and more what this martyr stood for. Iran will never forget the U.S. and Israeli crimes in this assassination, and has urged the U.N. Security Council to hold both responsible for this crime. This edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the significance of Mahdi Soleimani and his impact on the world stage.
2 years on since the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, made headlines, and Iranians still grieve his loss. On the second anniversary of the incident, thousands gathered at Tehran's Grand Mausoleum to pay tribute to him. Addressing the gathering, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi vowed to bring those behind the incident to justice.
If Trump and Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for the criminal act of assassinating Lieutenant Soleimani, Muslims will take our martyrs' revenge.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas, was assassinated in January 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport, on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is well known for dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh. This made him rise to fame in the region as the mastermind of the fight against terrorism.
Lieutenant Soleimani did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. We owe our security and stability to his sacrifices.
If it wasn't for Lieutenant General Soleimani, the entire region would have collapsed and fallen under Daesh control. Not only Iranians, but the people of the region are indebted to him.
The U.S. thought in vain that by assassinating Qasem Soleimani, it would stop his fight against terrorism. But in fact, the incident gave rise to a united front in the region against Washington, and that's what led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from the region.
Iran says it is seriously following up on its legal pursuit to prosecute those behind Soleimani's assassination. Iran and Iraq have recently formed a joint investigation committee comprising judicial experts from both countries. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, more than 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
These people say by assassinating General Soleimani, the United States tried to disrupt the regional fight against terrorism, something which they say put Washington on a confrontational course with the countries in West Asia and marked the beginning of its exit from the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, joins us from Brussels. Also joining us, international human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan, who joins us from London, Ontario.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
All right, I'd like to welcome you both, and I'd like to first start with you, Edward Corrigan. And the reason why I want to start with you is because I want you to set the stage and tell us the type of crime that has taken place here, or that took place, which led to the assassination of these two martyrs, General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas. Excuse me, because there might be some out there that have been told through various media outlets that this was justified in the words of the U.S., for example, but you tell us the legality of what took place, or the illegality, I should say, of what took place.
Well, in my view, it clearly is an illegal act. In fact, it's much more severe than just an extrajudicial execution, because General Soleimani was there at the invitation of the Iraqi government. It was an official diplomatic mission, and the Americans, assassinated him, but also the deputy leader of the Iraq Popular Mobilization Unit, which ostensibly was an ally of the United States in the war against the Islamic State and Daesh. So it's even, politically and legally, this is much worse than just an assassination, which of course is terrible in itself. You're violating the sovereignty of Iraq, and the Iraqi parliament a few days later unanimously adopted a resolution calling for the removal of all American troops from Iraq. So this is, at a very, very high level, you're violating the diplomatic sovereignty of not only Iran, but also Iraq itself, which is, again, it's an ally of the United States. They're fighting the war against Daesh. But it really exposes the fact that the United States and its allies, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and at one time Qatar, were funding this Islamic State against Iraq and against Syria. And, these are our American allies. Right. There has been, I can't really think of another assassination, or very few assassinations that's high profile of this and have violated as many laws, but also are so politically stupid. The Americans think that they're above the law. Right. There's no accountability for them. They can say what they want. There's been no legitimate reason given that I have seen to justify the assassination. They said, it was a preemptive strike. Well, but this is premeditated murder.
Sure.
And, you cannot assassinate, one of the top leaders of Iran and also of Iraq at the same time.
Sure.
So, the arrogance of the Americans here is simply incredible. There should be action at the International Criminal Court, also the UN Security Council, but of course it deals with the veto. But they're also calling for the General Assembly, the United Nations, to issue a resolution to commemorate this horrific act and to maintain the memory of General Soleimani and, of course, how he led the fight against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So sure. He is a very successful military commander, which is why I think the Americans wanted him dead.
Well, yeah, these actions should take place. We're going to get to that. But Elijah Magner, there's a line here that is very subtle, but yet it's huge in the implications, and that is the way that not only through media spin Qasem Soleimani is painted not for the hero that he has been, including Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, but also the fact that it was the U.S.'s right in which Israel also collaborated with the U.S. in its assassination, because they were not a force for the good fighting the evil Daesh terrorists. And this is given media spin, and they're trying very hard, Western media, to portray a negative image of them. Do you think they were successful? And why is it that they're trying to, so to speak, cover up what they have created in some sense?
Thank you for having me. Of course they were not successful, because the Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi at that time in January 2020 said that Qasem Soleimani was an envoy coming to Iraq to his invitation and to his call for two reasons. First, to mediate between the Americans and Iran, and second, a message between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Secondly, Brigadier General Qasem Soleimani was also an advisor to the Iraqi government, an official advisor, as recognized by Foreign Minister Ibrahim Jaafari at that time, who asked the support of Iran against ISIS to defeat the terrorist group. So he was an official envoy from a country to another country working against terrorism and counterterrorism. Now, after the assassination and when Donald Trump left office, we heard how he was disappointed that Benjamin Netanyahu dragged him to assassinate General Soleimani and did not go to war against Iran. So it was obvious that he's acting that Benjamin Netanyahu was acting as the advisor to Donald Trump because Trump was completely incompetent and unaware of the consequences of committing such a crime in a non-lawful way against a sovereign country when the U.S. forces were not supposed to be combat troop in Iraq. Also, there is a big blame on Iraq on different aspects because Soleimani was their guest and was working to support the Iraqi government and the Iraqi sovereignty and to give back the territory that was taken by ISIS. And also, it is up to the Iraqi to defend their guest and their envoy, particularly when this person represents a country that was supporting Iraq for free. Also, it is also the responsibility of the Iraqi to expel the American because they have violated the mandate they are in Iraq for. Secondly, they committed a crime without a consultation with the Iraqi government. Third, they implicated Iraq and Iran into a war on the Iraqi arena where perhaps they thought Iran is not going to react and they were disappointed by the Iranian reaction. And also we saw the parliament that asking the Iraqi forces to leave, the U.S. forces to leave the country, and they did not abide by the parliament resolution with 173 MPs mm-hmm. who voted for this to expel all the U.S. forces from the country. So all that is obvious to all the observers and world leaders. So it is no longer possible to hide this crime and to yet add it, as your guest rightly said, to all the unlawful act of, and crime of the United States.
Sure. Well, people seem to forget and they have a short memory when it comes down to it, Edward Corrigan. And I'd like to refresh maybe your memory too, I'm sorry to say, but overall because mine was refreshed, but more on, to the wider world in terms of the support that these terrorists were given. There's no denying, there's a fact that Saudi Arabia was directly supporting the terrorist group, Jabhat al-Nusra. There's no denying that Israel had been treated injured Daesh terrorists in the Golan Heights. The picture was there, former Prime Minister Netanyahu. There's no denying, New York Times, $1 billion secret CIA war in Syria, which died and was trying to get these terrorists to fight against the democratically elected government of President Assad. So you have the U.S. involved, you have Saudis involved, Israel involved, and yet you have the ones that were fighting them, namely, in this case, in Point Qasem, Soleimani martyred, to be assassinated. So where's the justice here?
Well, there's absolutely no justice. It's highly criminal. But it really exposes the role of the United States and its allies, Israel, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, in supporting Daesh and using the Islamic State as a way to destabilize the region and to do damage and to Iraqi society and to try to destroy Syria. You know, the former Qatar Prime Minister, publicly announced, said that, that Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates were the main financial supporters behind the Islamic State. And while the Americans pretend to be fighting the Islamic State, a lot of the time they're bombing the Iraqis, Syrians, Hezbollah, even, Russian soldiers that were there at the invitation of the Syrian government. So there's it really, it boggles the mind that they could do this and think that there was, little or no consequences they would have to face. And, this, around the world, this is seen as a horrific crime, yet another example of American arrogance and, use of violence and assassination to accomplish its political goals. But the American media and the Western media is not really addressing the core issue, which is American support for Daesh, the creation of Al-Qaeda and the funding and arming of Daesh and Islamic State by the United States and Israel, but also its lackeys, the Saudi Arabians and United Arab Emirates. So this, they still say, oh, we're fighting Daesh, we're fighting the Islamic State, but when you look at the actions of the Americans, who they bomb, who they kill, it's, they have been providing military support, logistical support, communication support, using satellites and everything else to help Daesh fight the democratically elected government of Syria, the democratically elected government of Iraq, and of course, to try to destabilize the region. And, this has cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people and done untold damage. But even the Americans have spent $2 trillion on this war. And, when the only thing accomplishment that they can count is that they helped destroy Syria and Iraq. And that is simply, unconscionable.
Well, let's see what Iran's president has said on this occasion, Elijah Magnier. And I'm going to quote him. Two statements that he said. The aggressor and the main assassin, the then president of the U.S., must face justice and retribution. That if Trump and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are not tried in a fair court for Soleimani's assassination, Muslims will take revenge. What is your interpretation of what he has said?
Well, what Pompeo told us that he lies all the time. Therefore, we can't take anything he say for face value. Also, we see how Pompeo imposed sanctions on International Criminal Court in The Hague. Therefore, it is an administration that rebuffed all the law that exists because they prevent any legal organization, even that was created by the U.S. itself, to condemn the American soldier for their act and the American administration for committed crimes overseas. So, as we all are very much aware today, that this U.S. administration, the previous one and the one before it, and throughout the years, always the administration did not respect any international law. Now, it is obvious that the Iraqis want to revenge their leader, Abu Mahdi Mohandes, and their guest, Qasem Soleimani, because they were killed in Iraq. And it is up to them to react for this killing and to make sure that the responsible who bragged about it and announced their responsibility will pay the heavy price equivalent to the value of these two commanders, which is a lot. I mean, we're talking about the people who are responsible, who were responsible for defeating ISIS and liberating Iraq and Syria and part of Lebanon, for the support that Soleimani offered to the act of the resistance to free these three countries from the terrorist organization that General Mike Flynn told his boss, Barack Obama, at that time, that ISIS was growing in Iraq and going to go to Syria, and America decided to close both eyes on this fact.
Indeed. Well, one thing that is in line with what Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has said, Edward Corrigan, is what Iran's leader actually said. In a sense, it parallels that, in which he said Marta Soleimani is more dangerous to the enemy than General Soleimani, because the likes of Soleimani will rise in the future. I mean, if you think about what is said there, it poses the question then that this assassination, this targeted killing, as you said, the extrajudicial killing that took place, didn't it in turn jeopardize the national security of Israel in particular in this region, since it was complicit in what the U.S. decided to do, which then, in a sense, mirrors other acts that the U.S. has done in other countries, where it comes back to haunt it?
Well, they think that they're above the law and that they're unaccountable and nobody can touch them. In Israel, there was a book published, I guess, a little over a year ago, which documented 2,000 assassinations that the Mossad conducted. And this is, this is staggering that, that a country would go running around assassinating 2,000 people. The United States has also, and through the CIA and other intelligence agencies, has been involved with numerous assassinations, coups, overthrowing of the government. And, none of this is discussed in the mainstream press in the United States or even Canada, and to a lesser extent in Western Europe. So, there's this, selective blindness, I guess the legal term would be, and a cover-up of all this criminality. But, the United States was funding and arming and supporting Daesh and the Islamic State against the sovereign countries in the Middle East and using it as a way of destabilizing these countries, which is, you know, a very, you know, vicious agenda, but ultimately doesn't work. It just creates people, you know, hate and resentment from the peoples of the region. You know, the Iraqi parliament unanimously, you know, called for the removal of U.S. troops, and the general said, okay, we'll leave, but then the Americans backtracked on that, and they still haven't left Iraq. So, you know, they're there in flagrant violation mm-hmm. of Iraq's sovereignty, and also at the wishes of the Iraqi government and the Iraqi people.
Sure.
And, you know, this is you know, it's really crazy thinking that they think they get away with this, and this somehow is going to help their security interests or Israel's security interests. It's not. It makes things much worse.
Well, Iran's President Elijah Magnier, in conclusion, has said that the most pressing issue for Marshal Soleimani was how to repel the enemy from the region and liberate the region. Do you think that this region will be liberated from, for example, the U.S. and the destruction that it has caused?
Qasem Soleimani is a man who represents an ideology, a mission, a task, and he represents the country. So it is in the constitution of Iran, in its Article 132, to support the oppressed population in the world. The oppressed population have been supported by Iran, and Iran is supporting people who want to liberate their country. Therefore, the assassination of Qasem Soleimani created a school where there are thousands of other Qasem Soleimani who will walk on the same path to support the population who want to liberate their country from the oppressor and the occupation. This is happening in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, in Venezuela, and any country who wants to push away the U.S. hegemony and the unlawful act of the Americans. So, yes, this is a school. The death of Qasem Soleimani okay. is just one event, and there are thousands of others who will continue the same work of Soleimani.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight, and we thank our guest Elijah Magnier from Brussels, journalist and political analyst. Thank you. And thank you, Edward Corrigan, international human rights lawyer who spoke to us from London, Ontario. And we thank you from Miko Vatapa, the entire team. It's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, today we are going to discuss Imam Khomeini's views on armed forces and his recommendations on the issue which he has dealt with in his testament. Stay tuned, please. Armed forces are among the most important bases of security and stability of countries, as they are in the first to confront any foreign aggression and threat against public security. Formation of an army in the modern shape in Iran dates back to some two centuries. The formation of armed forces has undergone ups and downs, but during the Pahlavi rule, Iran's army became one of the equipped armies in the region, and in the second half of the 20th century,
It was considered as the most powerful armies in the region and the world thanks to the oil money that was generously spent to purchase American weapons and ammunition. In view of this, Iran's army turned into the gendarme of the region. Upon the fall of the Shah in February 1979, the Iranian army weakened for a short while. But with Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist army's attack on Iran in 1980, the Islamic Republic revised its armed forces and succeeded to prevent Saddam's expansionism and safeguard the country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. The 8-year imposed war proved the high status of armed forces for the country. Hence, for the past 3 decades after the war, reinforcement of the armed forces has been one of the most important priorities of the Islamic Republic. This has its roots in the Islamic ideology. God says in Ayah 60 of Surah Anfal, "Prepare against them whatever you can of power." Imam Ali, peace upon him, writes in his famous letter to his top commander, Malik Ashtar, "The soldiers are the fortresses of people, the ornament of rulers, the dignity of religion and the ways of security, and people will not last long except by them." The formation and strengthening of armed forces have been emphasized in the Constitution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Accordingly, Iran's armed forces are divided into military and law enforcement forces with separate duties for each of them. The military forces consist of the Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC. According to Iran's constitution, the army is duty-bound to maintain the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the country, while the IRGC's duty is to maintain the Islamic Revolution and its achievements. The constitution emphatically prohibits the membership of foreigners in the armed forces. Furthermore, establishment of any foreign base is forbidden in the Iranian soil, even for peaceful purposes. The leader of the Islamic Revolution is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. According to the importance of the armed forces in the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, dedicated parts of his testament to the issue. He writes, "The armed forces, including the army, the IRGC, police, committees, and Basij, have a special characteristics. These forces, which are the strong arms of the Islamic Republic and the guardians of borders, ways, cities, villages, and finally the guards of security and comforters of the nation, should be paid a special attention by the nation, the government, and the parliament." Imam Khomeini warns against the role of big powers to make use of military forces in different countries for regime change and staging of coup d'etats. He writes in his testament, "Take heed that what in this world is abused by big powers and their destructive policies are the armed forces, as through political games, coups and regime changes are done by them. And the deceitful profiteers bribe some of their leaders and, through them, and the deceived commanders, take the countries in their hands, subjugate oppressed nations, and deny independence and freedom of these countries. And if virtuous commanders take the helms of power, there will never be the possibility of a coup or occupation of a country. And if there is, it will be defeated and unsuccessful by devoted commanders. Dear listeners, next time we will continue the discussion.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is